Welcome to Deep Dive Space Tech, from space access to Earth applications. Your business, investment, and technology podcast by DWR Eco, in cooperation with Mission Homebound and hosted by David Wortman.
I'm very happy to welcome Daria Stepanova to another edition of our Deep Dive Space Tech. She is CEO and co-founder of Airmo. Hi, Daria.
Hello, it's very great to be here.
Yes, it's great to have you here on the show because you are one of these very exciting space tech companies, we call them, in particular with very close relationship of our core industries, which we have been talking with our audiences in the past couple of years already, meaning clean tech, because you use space tech to observe certain emissions on Earth, right? Maybe tell us a few sentences about what you do, and then we do a little deep dive in more details.
Yeah, definitely. Airmo mission is to bring transparency into climate monitoring. And our first task on that way is to track methane emissions. We help on one side mitigate the huge impact on the climate of unreported, unobserved methane leakages. On the other side, we help in energy industry effectively decarbonize and save the product that is lost in leakages.
All right. Well, before we move into what kind of technologies you use and what kind of business model actually you have for your clients, is why is it so important to monitor methane, and what's the difference to the, let's say, more the normal CO2 emissions, and why are you in these other emissions tracking either?
Very good question. So methane on one side is responsible for 1/3 of temperature rise on the planet due to it. The heavier global warming potential. It's 86 times more powerful than CO2 in terms of warming effect. And second side of things is cost efficiency. Methane leakages most of the time, especially in energy infrastructure, occurring due to leakages, due to venting, due to flaring events that can be mitigated. So the mitigation component around methane is easy. You just plug a leakage, you close the vent, you need to update certain infrastructure to put excess of the gas back in work, back in compressor to produce electricity. Comparing to the mitigation of CO2, it's way cheaper and way more affordable. The problem with methane, it's you don't know where it's leaking from. So the methane is invisible gas. It requires currently quite complex monitoring systems that make the whole monitoring very expensive and economically non-sustainable. So with our solution, we help energy industry to spot methane at the fraction of costs that compared to existing systems.
Yeah, well, to have a better understanding of where are the potential leakages coming from in the methane value chain. You said it's quite hard, or has been quite hard in the past, but where is the most leakage coming from, right? In the beginning, when gas is produced, is it while transporting it? Is it some sort of, let's say, dissemination through the pipeline, or is it while being burned at the client's site producing energy? So where are the theoretically the most leakages coming from?
It's a very good question. There's no direct answer to that. There are like studies by different organizations around where actual methane, where the most of the methane is coming from. We're talking about energy infrastructure, super emitter events, of course, with the upstream, I would put it at the first place. On the other side, if the easiest mitigation part stays with downstream applications, so storages, compressor stations, and so on. While the biggest impact from perspective of mitigating volume of methane is upstream, the easiest and the most cost-effective way is to monitor the full upstream, downstream, and also midstream, also pipelines.
Okay. And you said it has been difficult in the past, and we come to your solution in a second, but how has this been tracked so far in the past? So what are the more conventional ways to track methane leakages, or has it just not been tracked at all?
It has been tracked with different timescales, with different technologies. Most of the monitoring services have been manual. So even today, there are people walking by the pipelines, people like with sniffer devices or the handhold devices. That it takes weeks and weeks of manual inspection or handhold devices. People involved has been the industry standard. Remote sensing technologies that decrease the time of monitoring significantly and allow deliver the more cost-effective services have been recently introduced, especially with the airborne sensing. Yeah, we have great opportunities with short flights, short campaigns, cover large territories, large pipelines. So.
Okay.
Going from manual inspection is something that makes sense.
So manual has been in the past, then now more and more is going into airborne. And airborne means little airplanes, helicopters, drones, all of the above. Or what is the most effective way to do it airborne?
Yeah, depends. Depends on the distances, of course. In our case, we're flying drone sensors that cover up to 100 kilometers per one flight. Planes can cover up to 1,000 kilometers per one flight, and here depends on the customer needs, on the length of the pipeline, on the distribution of assets. Some of customers have very localized infrastructure. Some of our customers have infrastructure very distributed among like large territories. Here, we together with customers plan the campaigns that make the most sense for them.
Okay. And you're using sensors. So what kind of sensors are able to detect these leakages?
Right. So we built our own sensors, and we actually started with a hard one. We started with a satellite sensor and then decided to also participate in the airborne methane monitoring. We built a very unique expertise in the team, both in active and passive sensing technology. Our the most like working horse at the moment is the fourth wave infrared push broom spectrometer. It's a very complex optical device that we also will be launching on the satellite system next year. But we also built active sensing devices with TDLAS sensors, LiDAR sensors that are able to pinpoint methane with a higher precision than passive devices.
Okay, so it's basically visual, or is it also through odor or other ways of detecting leakages?
It's spectroscopy. Basically, we measure lines, absorption lines of methane in the spectrum, where methane has in spectrometers is 1.6 micron. We measure light, absorption light.
So it's light and visual, right?
Yeah.
And so you use the same sensors on drones and airplanes, like you also do on satellites, or do they actually differ?
On the airplanes, we build the space representative instruments. So on one side, the tests were upcoming space instruments in the real world. On the drones, we had to miniaturize sensors further for them to fit the drone to meet the duration of the flight requirements as well. So we try to make them as representative as possible and miniaturize them depending on the carrier.
Okay. And now let's move into your core expertise on satellites. So what is the benefit of using satellites for censoring these leakages opposed to, let's say, drones or airplanes?
Yeah, very good. Very good question. As satellites have a unique view on the world being launched in the specific orbit. In the scope of 5 years, a satellite will be passing any spot on the globe within a week. Satellites are able to cover any place with pretty much zero manual support, only operator uploading the scheduler in the satellite is the only thing that is left. So comparing to airborne sensing, it's incredibly cost effective to run campaigns with a satellite. There's no manual need, no need to travel to another country. The satellite can see any place on the planet within a very short period of time. And observation scope for the satellite is also 5 years. The duration, lifetime duration of the satellite. So launching our own satellite will have the 5 years upfront to monitor emissions globally in the with a weekly revisit rate on any area in the planet.
Okay. And the observation quality, is it the same or even better or slightly worse to what you could observe from much, much closer drone or airplane visibility sensors?
Yeah, that's a trade-off. So with a satellite flies around 500 kilometers away from the target, of course, the sensitivity of measurement drops. With satellite, we will be able to see only large leakages. But that's a trade-off. For small leakages, for a certain type of infrastructure monitoring, drones will still be needed. But what we are very optimistic at Thermo, we occupy all the different heights for monitoring drones, planes, and the satellites. So from several meters to targets to 500 kilometers to the target, we are able to deliver this comprehensive view on the emissions for different types of infrastructure for our clients that they actually need.
Okay, so there are some downsides to that, but it makes it more cost efficiently, as you said. Can you tell us a bit around the regulatory, let's say, requirements or why clients are actually doing that? Is there a specific need to do it very close up with drones, or is it enough just to use the more 500 kilometer view and less precise?
There are regulations around methane monitoring that is currently strengthening. EU methane regulation, for instance, sets the rules for monitoring, so the time scale, sensitivity scale for the monitoring as well, depending on the reporting part. Different methodologies, different technologies should be used. At the most precise level, one part of regulation enforces down to 1 gram per hour in detection threshold. That's something our drone systems can comply with for the reconciliation for the site level assessment. Satellites are recommended for exactly monitoring of the super meteorites and the semi-continuous monitoring. So on one side, yeah, regulations are there. Regulations are strengthening. Regulations are definitely pushing the industry forward. On the other side, the economics is something that customers also appreciate. Comparison, like, so methane is a gas. It's a natural gas. It can be sold. So instead of losing it in the leakages, if effectively monitored, if cost effectively monitored, our customers are incentivized to keep it in the pipeline, keep it in the infrastructure. The two angles around the problem, because regulation gives a push, but with the right price tag on the monitoring, our customers are economically incentivized to run the campaigns as well.
Okay. Well, we will talk a bit more about the market and the price points in a few minutes. But before that, I would like to understand a bit more, how's your technology set up? If you say that you use satellites, are these your own satellites or are these third-party satellites? Maybe you can walk us through how your technology setup is in space.
Definitely. So we are, our expertise is in remote sensing technologies, in optical systems, in processing for the complex optical systems. Currently, we're using public satellite data. So there are several governmental satellite, Copernicus, for example, emit that deliver free data access. So we are processing those. We're launching our own proprietary satellite next year. That we're currently developing. We are not focusing on satellites. So satellite platform, we have a great partner. We are in charge of delivering the instrument, the whole processing stack for this instrument.
Okay, so I mean, just 1 second. So right now you are using open data through Copernicus. Do they already have the right sensors up there? Do you, I don't know, cross-reference other data? How do you make sure that you have the data you need to track methane leakages through the existing sensors, the existing routes of a Copernicus satellite?
Right, so Copernicus is capable of monitoring methane leakages around 1 ton per hour. So these are really big, huge emissions. With our system, we'll be able to track down to 50 kilogram per hour. So it's a big, big difference between. While Copernicus' goal is to map regional level emissions. That's why the detection threshold is so high. Also, the pixel size is huge in case of Sentinel. In our case, we were focusing on the asset level. So much smaller scene, much more precise sensitivity as well. So
okay. So currently, this is the upgrade you're going to go into with your own satellite. So you'll be a lot more precise on your data, right? And the existing data of Copernicus, are they just for free? Do you have to pay for them? How does that currently work?
Yeah, the data is for free. It comes with a bit of delay, which in case of our satellite, we'll also be able to minimize. But yeah, the data comes for free, and everyone who has build expertise in processing algorithms can also analyze it.
Okay. And so your new satellites, you just said, will be launched next year, right? Will it be just one satellite? Will this be a constellation you're building up of how many satellites? But how many do you need, and how many you are planning?
We're planning to deploy 12. We have second satellite deployment strategy is also already on track, and 12 in total to get to daily revisit rates on any spot of the globe. We don't need more than 12.
Okay, and you will send them up at once, or is this through series of years you set them up?
Yeah, series of years. Yeah, we plan to improve our instrument, to learn about our instrument, of course. And there are several subsequent launches.
Okay, so first launch is next year, and this will be launched through, I would assume, SpaceX then, or who's the carrier?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, and you have secured already your slot, or you're still negotiating? What's the current status around that?
Our partner, satellite provider, has launched secured for us.
Okay, and who's your partner there? Who will
Indurosat? Yeah, who partnered with Indurosat to launch our first mission?
Okay, and do you know already when this is gonna happen?
Next year. So we have June is our target, and our backup slot is in October.
Okay, all right. So you have still a good year to prepare for that. So the satellite has been developed already, or are you still working on it? What's the status around that?
As a satellite, development is done, but now we're manufacturing, our partners manufactured the platform on our side. We manufactured the flight version of the instrument.
Okay, so you provide all the specs, all the data and requirements, but another party is building it, correct? And who's building it?
I mean the instrument or the satellite?
Like tell me about both. Yes.
The satellite we use in the platform from Indurosat that has, TRL-9 has been in space. So they are, say we match really well on performance that platform can achieve. And we need on the instrument, part of the instrument we manufacture ourselves, but part of the instrument we manufacture with partners in Germany. So all the hardware work is done in Germany.
Okay. Could you give us a little bit an idea of how much the costs are, and whether, I would assume that the first satellite is probably more costly than the 12th one you're planning. So do you see any economies of scales, costs are lowering over time?
A very good question. So it's, I would say it's not as expensive as it was before. It's definitely the cost of the price of the satellite platform is definitely, which it goes down, while performances of the platform are growing. For the 12th satellite, there will be a significant cut as non-recurrent works would not be needed anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And so what has been the biggest challenge so far around launching your product?
Right. So here I would say every Earth observation startup meets the question, following question, your pre-product, you have this awesome idea, you need to secure the funding for the satellite launch. But as your pre-product, you need to demonstrate a certain degree of traction. And it's really hard to demonstrate it, and both to customers and investors, before you have a satellite in space. So it's every satellite, every Earth observation company meets this challenge. And yeah, I'm very happy how we approached it with our airborne service. We've adjusted the space instruments for the aircraft, and secured really great customers last year, including Uniper, including gas storages in Dakh region, including pipeline operators in the Dakh region, customers in Central Asia, customers in the Middle East. We've done campaigns. And continuing performing campaigns. So yeah, I think this has been the most challenging, how to prepare strategy for the company, secure enough customers, enough funding before your product is actually out.
Okay. And tell us a bit more about your customers. You just mentioned Uniper. What are your target audiences right now, your target customers?
We spend more than half of our time of our sales team in mid-market, the storage operator, all the gas infrastructure in Europe, storage operators, pipeline operators, TSOs, energy industry, with the urgent pressure to prepare for the EU methane regulation on one side, and the second side losing money in the leakages. Second tier, large oil and gas customers that are very well aware of the problem, already have certain expertise in measuring methane, but are looking for cost effective and efficient solutions. This is the second group. And the third group includes and industries outside of oil and gas, coal, landfills. So these are mm-hmm. three buckets of customers that we are working with.
Mm-hmm. And who would you consider as your main competitor in this field?
Definitely GGSat is one of the most advanced space companies. It's a pioneer in commercial methane monitoring I think there are 14 satellites in orbit at this stage, with more than 10 years being in the market. I think the GGSat definitely proved that there is a commercial case for the space-based methane monitoring. Yeah, so definitely that's the biggest competitor for us.
So your competitors are really other space-based companies, and competitors are not drone or other companies who are using airplanes or drones.
There are competitors definitely for both airborne and drone monitoring, and the markets for both are more competitive than space. Mm-hmm. We see our main product, IQMorph product, coming from the space, from 500 kilometers away, and with this global coverage, this near real time features. That's why we see the space competitors as the key competitors. Although, there are much more competition. Both in the drones in airplane domain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You said a little earlier in our conversation that the main driving forces for your customers are regulation on the one hand. So they need to comply to existing laws. But on the other hand, they're incentivized by not losing a gas throughout the value chain. So is this, those two things coming together, is this already enough for you to ask the prices for your services you need to be sustainable on the financial side as well?
Definitely. And this benchmark of how much gas our clients are losing is a perfect benchmark for how much our service should cost. So definitely, it definitely economically makes sense. You can add on top risks of non-action. You can add on top risks of not meeting the strategy commitments for decarbonization. So energy sector has very ambitious goals on decarbonizing by 2030, 2040. And these commitments should be met. And methane is one of the easiest ways towards this decarbonization promises. So economics, risks of non-action, penalties, it comes all together on top and helps us navigate through right pricing.
Mm-hmm. And what is your pricing model? Is it project-based, or is it a yearly and annual subscription? How do you do that?
Yeah, exactly. So we price our service with the kilometer square monitoring for the satellite case is very straightforward. We monitor a certain area. It's measured in square kilometers, and our customers are spending credits with one credit equal for 1 square kilometer of monitoring. And we apply the same logic to our airborne and drone monitoring with the extra fee on top around manual parts of the service.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And your main clients are now more in Germany, in the DACH region, in Europe, or globally? How do you target your clients right now?
Yeah, we're a global company. We've done campaigns on several continents. Our customers are spanning from Australia to Chile. Most of the customers are, of course, in Europe. But we've done a lot of campaigns in Asia, in Central Asia is our target of interest. Middle East is a targeted area of interest.
Mm-hmm. And methane leakages detection is your core solution right now. Are you considering as well to move into other market solutions? Or is really gas methane the main thing you would be focusing on for the next couple of years?
So there's a lot of work to do with methane, and it's not going to get less. I think we see oil and gas production is increasing in the world. We're able to adapt our technology to other trace gases as well. So as soon as we're done with methane issue, we can adjust the instruments for other trace gases.
So even if they're already in space, if these 12 satellites in space already, you can adjust them to other gases, or does it require new satellites, new instruments?
So some trace gases would definitely require a hardware adjustment. In case of CO2, we'd be able to see CO2 as well with our with the constellation. But if the trace gas is outside of the spectral window that we're observing, we'd need to do modifications on the hardware side. But as soon as you have the key instrument, as soon as you figured out the design of your key instrument, adjusting the spectral window is not that complicated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But adjusting the hardware in space would be probably rather difficult, or you see technologies already emerging?
No, I mean, our target is to have 100% capacity booked on the constellation. So in any case, we would need to launch new sensors.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. This is has been a quite interesting journey into what you guys are doing, Daria. And I think it's a pretty good outlook. Maybe one last question is, how do you manage your growth through just the liquidity you get in, and this is bootstraps, or do you have the need of more venture capital funding?
Yeah, we'll definitely go for Series A financing as soon as we will launch our satellites for growth. For the subsequent satellite launches, we would be fundraising again. So Series A is definitely the rest. We'll see.
Okay. And can you already talk about how big the round's going to be? How much money you're looking for?
Yeah, so currently we're preparing a couple of cool opportunities to deploy sensors available, and we're looking at different options.
Mm-hmm. And are there any regulatory, let's say, constraints which really could stop or slow your growth? Or is the regulatory environment totally in favor of what you are doing?
Good question. I would say in terms of environment, monitoring and protection regulation is definitely supporting our business case. Like, we're not dependent on it, but there's definitely incoming winds for us. But we're trying to build the business independent from the regulation. So we,
All right, Daria. Well, thank you so much. And we really wish you a lot of luck with your first launch next year. And in the meantime, you keep on going with your airborne services. And so hopefully talk to you the latest sometime next year when your first satellite has been successfully launched.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Time to surface. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful for a rating or a subscription. This series is produced by DWR Eco in cooperation with Mission Homebound. to go deeper or connect with our guests, visit us at dwr-eco.com or mission-homebound.com.